All right, well, good morning, everyone. Sorry, we're starting a little late, but getting organized here. Before we start, if you were here last week, I'm sorry, don't shoot me. No, I didn't feel very effective, efficient. I chased way too many squirrels, and we didn't get through what I wanted to, and you guys have to listen to me babble. So I apologize for that. Knuckle down. We're going to be tough today. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this day, and we thank you for the privilege of being Americans, and help us to live our Christian faith and understand our American form of government so we can glorify you by honoring what our government says it does. Help us to be model citizens, voting the way not only you would have us, but the way the Constitution allows us. Bless this time as we just look at it, our nation's history a little, and how you have had your hand on our nation. Still a great nation, despite all our problems. Thank you for this time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, so.
Did you say you were a knuckle down or you were a knucklehead?
Both. And last time we were talking about, you know, the introduction and background, but we talked about the biblical background for human government and then our responsibility to human government in general as God's people. And that can be hard. What if your government is tyrannical? Well, you know, we may not be too happy sometimes with our government, but we're not as, go live in North Korea. You know, so we covered what the Bible says. This time, what I really want to get through is a little bit of our constitutional background, our founding documents, our founding fathers. I know a lot of us said back in junior high or high school, we had government classes. I think that ought to be mandatory. But how many of us really understand that and know it today? I would submit that most Christians really don't. Ooh, where's my apple? Thanks, Lauren. I would submit most Christians, we have no interest. And so I appreciate you guys being here. But at least in the knuckleheads' opinion, I think we should understand some of this and able to rightly vote. And we don't really understand some of the principles of our own federal government. We were talking this morning with the men, and, you know, federal government, you know, my opinion, getting very intrusive in a lot of areas it should not be involved. And then the states really should have, as the Constitution says, basically unlimited powers. And so, you know, we make fun of, you know, we'll say people that, you know, if the federal government, for example, throws abortion issues back to the states, we you know, people squawk about that because they don't, if they don't like their state, they want the federal government to legislate. And we make fun of them for that. Well, but then we can be just as bad if our state, and our state, I'm personally unhappy with the direction this state, you know, when I was born, it was a pretty good state. When I moved away, you see how it's gone downhill? No, but sometimes we do the same thing. If we don't like what our state does, we want the federal government to step in. Is that the federal government's job? Is it constitutionally allowed? It may be a good law, but should the federal government be doing that? And that's where we can be hypocrites. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. So put on your, yeah, and if you have questions you don't understand, I'm going to try to be knuckle down, focused here. So, Janet.
I guess you're saying this about those groups I don't remember this for some part, is that he's a good conservative survey taker. In evangelical, professing out evangelical Christians, only 30 to 50% vote. You go, oh my God.
Especially this time around.
Yeah.
The projections are.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to make a hard statement. I think that's sin. Okay? Okay, you may not like either of the candidates. That's fine. But to not vote, that's, we have the privilege, and last week, we have the responsibility to be salt and light. You know, I don't think any of us are for Christian nationalism as portrayed by the opposers of that, but we should be involved in government. We talked about that last week. All right, so yeah, very good, Janet. Thank you. Okay, so if you remember our history, our country was born not in 1619, but 1776. What did I'm not going to ask a bunch of loose questions here. Yeah. And where was the Air Force then? You guys were failing. Jesus. But so our founders, some brilliant men, you know, that just, we should be in awe of what they accomplished. And during that time, you know, late 1700s was a period, you've heard of the Scientific Revolution. You know, men like Newton, Bacon, Galileo, Kepler, they had led up to the Scientific Revolution and the rise of modern science, math, reason. The Enlightenment was the age of reason, so we were starting to think instead of just not think, which was good. There were positive aspects to that. And so reason was the primary source of authority. So science, philosophy, economics, laws, politics, and some too much religion too, but this is the milieu, you know, the context of where our country was born. Think of the French Revolution and how much different that was than our revolution. So our founding fathers, if you went back and studied them, where did they get their information? You know, where did they get their sources? How were they thinking? You know, I like to know why. You know, why are you believing that? And then what are the results? So you're going to have to bear with the knucklehead, because some of this is understanding where this is coming from. So the sources for our founding father, as they began working, remember the Articles of Confederation were pretty weak when it came to fighting against the British. And so we realized we need a little better form of government. And that's where the idea of a constitutional Congress came about. And there were people that opposed the federal government, the national government, having any power. And so there were controversies. How are we going to start with our own king? Is the president, some of the debates, the president under this new form of government, is he going to be like a king? And in fact, some of the guys, I think it was John Adams, thought we should call, what are we going to call the president? And he said, what was it?
His
Majesty the President, or His Royal Highness. You know, so we were coming out of a king, a constitutional monarchy in Britain, but they had King George. So what did they look at? The Bible, 34% of what is quoted in the founding documents. They quote the Bible 34% of the time. Enlightenment thinkers, some names you've probably not heard of, but some 22%, but a guy named Montesquieu, you maybe heard the name, Blackstone, the English lawyer. So a lot of our law came from the English common law. John Locke, he was an English philosopher and a physician. And some of his concepts, P. people need protection from the absolute monarch. A separation of power, you might say. People hold supreme power. Imagine that. Blackstone, I guess all law has its source in God, the law of nature, revealed law, the role of judges. They are to discover and apply the law, not make law. How stupid is that? But interpret the will of the legislature. These were the concepts from Blackstone. From Montesquieu, all law has its source in God, and man is basically evil and self-centered. Do not follow God's laws. Religion fosters values which find expression in civil laws. So religion provides good laws and good government. He understood sin nature. That's a huge worldview issue today. What does government do and how does it respond? Are people basically good, or, is some law required? That's goes back to what God ordained human government for. So John Locke, then, all law is grounded in natural law. You've probably heard that term. That's a big debate. Not many of us understand, but that's rooted in the eternal law of God and gives us natural rights. Imagine that. Things like life, liberty, and property. And his idea of a social compact. So the people cede limited power to government to preserve those rights. Imagine that. So limited government is delegated by God and the people. That's why we have the 10th Amendment. We'll get into that. So the consequences of all this, how they thought, and as they were going into the Constitutional Convention, after the American Revolution, was a return to first principles, going back, versus, unalienable rights, things like that, versus in England, they had what was called the Glorious Revolution. Once again, we just want a good king, William and Mary, William of Orange in 1688, and so we were going back to first principle versus tradition of natural law, natural rights based on God's law and biblical principles. Kelvin, would you read Psalm 96, please?
Sure. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Proclaim the good news of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations. Wonders among all people. The Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the peoples are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Give to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Give to the Lord glory and strength. Glory to the Lord. Give to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. But worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Say to the nations, the Lord reigns. The world is also firmly established. It shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. Let the heavens rejoice and let the earth be glad. Let the sea roar in all its fullness. Let the field be joyful and all that is in it. And all the trees in the woods will rejoice before the Lord. For he is coming to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with his truth.
Okay, so that's just a psalm extolling God as supreme judge and government and kingship under God. So just God is foundational to all this. So even some enlightened, what we would call enlightened thinkers, humanists back then, still were operating under a biblical, at least concept of reality. And so the purpose of government then, because of these consequences, return to first principles and the importance of limited government. We saw that already. And included in that then is a separation of powers. We're going to see how important that is. Scott, would you mind reading Isaiah 33:22? This is a very important verse that just really influenced our separation of powers. Isaiah 33:22.
Isaiah 33:22. For the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us.
Okay, so right there, obviously God supreme, but the founders looked at that and said, what three areas of government? The Lord is our judge, he is our lawgiver, the Congress, and he's the king, the executive. And so those three branches, that's where they came from, okay? And so the purpose then is of this limited government with separation of powers was that social compact to protect the citizens' life, liberty, property, and some of the enlightenment pillars coming out of, you know, a king oppressing federal, you know, feudalism, all those things. So out of those came some of these natural rights. Tony.
That last word, it answers your question about the guys that live in the mountain in North Carolina. You said there's a government supposed to protect those people.
Which government? See, that's the biggest. We're talking about God here. Okay, so that's okay. Yeah. Okay, but our Constitution says, okay, not going to get on that road yet. We will.
Squirrel.
So the Enlightenment pillars, if you will. So happiness, you know, the people, their government should bring under the umbrella of, you know, the pursuit of happiness, but happiness, a foundation of science, religious freedom, political freedom, economic freedom, moral freedom. These were radical concepts coming out of, you know, kings that told you what your rights were. So going back to first principles, natural rights. So St. Augustine, on the biblical function of government, a quote, government is not so much a necessary evil as a necessity because of evil. And that's, we saw that if you were here last week. You know, so governments, no matter how bad, theoretically, prevent anarchy. That's, you know, where we are all gods to ourselves. That's why God ordained human government. So, okay, so what are some of the documents? Well, of course, we know the Declaration of Independence. Kelvin, you want to read that? I'm going to let you read some of these so I don't.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
Okay, fairly should be fairly familiar words. So equality in the sense of for everybody equally, natural rights, a contract by the limited government, who is the function of government is to secure those rights, not to oppress, not to tell us what our rights are. Rights don't come from government. They come from God. And that's what our, according to our founders. And so those eternal principles, they are some called unalienable. We don't like that word alien, illegal aliens, but alien means foreign or from an outside source. So unalienable, they don't come from an outside source other than God. So limited government then, with the separation of powers. In the Declaration, you've heard this before, references to God, the laws of nature and of nature's God. He is the legislator. He is the creator. He's the king or the executor. In other words, you know, just the code words they used, you know, sort of governmental or lawyer languages, but he's the nature's God. He's our creator. He's the supreme judge of the world. He's our judge. And with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, those are all words you will see in the Declaration. He is our founder and our sustainer. A famous quote, when the Declaration of Independence was being signed in 1776, Samuel Adams, brewer and patriot, declared, "We have this day restored the sovereign to whom all men ought to be obedient. He reigns in heaven, and from the rising of the setting of the sun, let his kingdom come." You know, the way they talked, I would love to hear a speech like that by a politician today. So the Declaration has sort of lofty, abstract ideals based on the eternal truths of God. So that's understanding where this comes from. I love listening to talking heads now that don't understand this. You know, government gives us our rights. Our founders were all slave owners. So they can't say anything. I mean, just let's try to think a little bit. So then how do those abstract ideals get the nuts and bolts, the flesh? Well, they were defended by, how many of you, well, you've all heard of the Federalist Papers. What's a summary of the Federalist Papers?
Writing under the pen name Publius, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay explained the merits and ideals of the proposed Constitution while confronting objections raised by its opponents. Thomas Jefferson described the work as the best commentary on the principles of government which was ever written. Some have called the Federalist Papers the foremost American contribution to political thought. It gives us an insight into the meaning and intent of the framework. It gives us the why of the Constitution, which was to be ratified by the people.
Okay, and I agree with that. Hopefully you do too, but the Federalist Papers are almost a commentary on our form of government. And did you get that? We're going to talk about this in a minute. Gives us insight into the meaning and intent of the framers. Going back to the meaning of the author. I wonder where we'll go with that. Exactly. Okay, now tell us, what about Federalist Number 1, which was written by Hamilton?
It has been frequently remarked that it seems to have been reserved to the people of this country, by their conduct and example, to decide the important question whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to be dependent for their political constitutions on accident and force.
Did you get that? That is a question for today. Are the people capable? Do they understand this stuff enough to establish good constitutional, in this case, government, from reflecting, gee, that's thinking. Do any of us think anymore? Yeah, I mean, those are rhetorical questions for society, but, and choice, or like a monarchy, or are you forever destined to be, have it forced on you by accident and force? That is the brilliance of our form of government. And so that justifies the ideals for the Constitution and provide meaning. The meaning of the Constitution. So now on your handout, we can sort of see more of this. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's the preamble courtesy of Schoolhouse Rock. I remember that from cartoons in 1980. I can still have that memorized. So that's sort of the lofty purpose. Now you can see some of those words, how people will try to take those abstract words and say, oh, general welfare, that means handouts for everybody. No. So the lofty purpose, but what does it mean and from whence did it spring? So the Constitution, which is to secure the rights, natural rights, unalienable rights for the people, the nuts and the bolts. How? Okay, organization. Just a couple, you've got those written there. There's a preamble, just quoted that. Article 1 is the legislature, Congress, which is divided into representative Senate. Article 2, executive president. Article 3, judicial power, that's Supreme Court and lesser courts. Article 4 is admitting new states to the Union, so we don't use that much anymore. Article 5, there are specific ways to amend the Constitution. Article 6, after the war, assuming the state debts, that was part of having a government that could unify the nation. And then Article 7 was on ratifying the Constitution. And in there is some archaic language, you know, about slaves. A lot of the debates, you know, the South wanted their slaves to count as one vote, if you remember that, because I'll tell them how to vote, you know, and the compromise was each slave is three fifths of a person. Oh, you Republicans think black people are only three fifths of, no, come on. You know, you're being purposely disingenuous. But that's the structure. It's a very short document. I'm not sure exactly how many words, but it's smaller than our, obviously smaller than our New Testament. It's very small document. Now, if you look at the U.S. Code, how that is expanded and how we have added to a lot of this. So the separation of powers then in the Constitution, that's known as federalism. Okay? Would you read Federalist 51 by Madison wrote this. Kelvin.
The greatest security against the concentration of power are the constitutional means and the personal motives to resist. Ambition must be made to counteract ambition. The interest of the man must be connected to the constitutional right of the place.
Okay, you get the gist of that. The idea is each of those three branches of government, Congress, President, Judicial, should jealously guard their own power. And so nowadays, well, I want the Supreme Court to overrule and make laws. No, the President and the Congress are supposed to equally be doing their job with the Constitution in mind. The Supreme Court does not have the final say on what the Constitution means. See, that's why a certain party is talking about stacking the Supreme Court. That way, because we've been conditioned to think the Supreme Court has the final say on, that's not what that law means. I believe, you know, the Supreme Court gets to decide. No. And we've had, you know, cases in history where, you know, the president has stood up and said, no, we're not doing that. Or Congress has, you know, said, no, we're not doing that. So, Tony.
I just want to go back to Article 3,
yes,
where it says Supreme Court. And you use the word lesser courts, but I like this word here, inferior courts.
Well,
because today, said probably more true than anything.
And that's a good point.
It also says, as the Congress may from time to time ordain.
Yeah, I didn't read all that, but there is a structure and there's a mechanism for it.
Yeah.
but let's not let the structure end up overturning the purpose of Article 3. Okay, so the structure then, we the people, starts with the consent of the government, ratify the Constitution. So the people are supreme. We ratified the Constitution. So now we have a Constitution, not a pure democracy. And it's called small r, republicanism. We are a republic, a constitutional republic. And I'm sparing you all the history of Greece and Rome and a lot of the history that these guys, our founders, brilliant, brilliant. And they studied all this stuff. And they took the best out of Greece, the best out of the Roman Republic with their Senate, you know, and even the Caesar. And that's where a lot of the foundation came for how we thought. And so with the federal government, then we have those three branches. The big one we're going to talk about here in just a second, limited power, especially for Congress. They are enumerated powers. Did you know? And I suspect most of us really don't know this. Congress is only, our federal government is only allowed to pass laws that have been enumerated, given to them. And there's maybe 18 paragraphs. They can only pass basically national laws that fit within those 18 areas. You tell me, well, you know, you've got a list there. I'm not going to read all those. But you tell me how many laws fall outside that. And so that's where, you know, the idea of the federal government and federalism in the idea of federal, state, local governments, the federal government can only do this. States can do everything else. We'll get to that in a minute, the 10th Amendment. But the federal government has been arrogating, usurping the authority of the states and the people. And we'll talk a little bit about, especially with the rise of the late 1800s, of progressivism, the good progressive, not good, but the not crazy progressives. We have neo-progressives now. And then the state government has, so federal limited power, you know, for things like foreign policy, defense, commerce. You know, I would submit national borders, like our, you know, our border with Mexico. The federal government should be doing that. State have unlimited powers, basically. The 10th Amendment says that. And with regard to domestic policy. So the enumerated powers then, federal government only has the powers specifically given to it by we the people in the Constitution. And an illustration of this, in those Federalist Papers, number 84, Alexander Hamilton even made an argument, we don't need a Bill of Rights. Why do? Because it's all assumed. This should be so obvious, the federal government should be doing this. But man, being the fallen creature he is, some of the states wouldn't ratify the Constitution unless there was a Bill of Rights, which were the first 10 amendments, that said it, you know, let's not be oblique about this. Let's specifically state, federal government, you can't do this. And even now we need to say double secret, you can't do this. You know, but we see how it's been abused since then. So he made the argument the Bill of Rights is not necessary. And so Article 1, Section 8, then, are those 18 different paragraphs. Those are what are enumerated power. Everything else goes to the states. And state government then has the unlimited concerning domestic policy. The 10th Amendment says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states. There are some things that the Constitution does say. States, you can't do this. This is a federal job. Are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Imagine that. So, let me make sure I'm... Okay. So, a quick summary then of government. First of all, the whole foundation in the lurking in the background for those right-wing Christian nationalists that formed our government. Ha ha ha. We have an unlimited king. No matter what, a lot of deistic thinkers, but Christian, primarily Christian, understanding of an unlimited king, God. For the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king. He will save us. Okay? So God unlimited, natural rights, limited government with a separation of powers. All men are created equal. Kelvin, would you read then?
James Madison, Federalist 51.
Yeah, good, you got that.
It's a reflection on human nature that such devices should be necessary to control the abuses of government. But what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary.
Did you get that? So government is necessary, because guess what? You're not angels. But the Constitution should be limiting our government, because they're not angels. And that's, you know, when we don't understand human nature, you see how that can get confused. And a lot of the arguments for big government is, but we are objective. We just want what's best for everybody. And that's why we have laws that are, you know, we have 70-year-old grandmothers going to jail for praying outside an abortion clinic. That's evil. But riots and, you know, Black Lives Matter, that's okay. And we are a constitutional republic. How many of you, when you watch the news or hear politicians, we have to preserve our democracy? Okay, the way you mean it? No, we don't. You don't understand what that means. And you would hope politicians would, you know, they're worse than preachers, by the way. You would think they would understand some of this stuff, but they don't. And we'll talk about some of the problems of that if we want in a little bit. So it's a constitutional republic, not a pure democracy. So the term is lex rex, if you've ever heard that Latin phrase. The law is king. So that, you know, that was to prevent the king from, you know, rex, lex is the king is law. Whatever the king says goes. No, that's not what we have. That's what certain people would like. Whatever Washington says goes. No, whatever the Constitution says, Washington should follow. I saw a hand.
Doesn't that Federalist 51 also give a hint as to why eventually all human systems, all human governments fail? If they are the reflections of human nature, sooner or later, they fail.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we're just taking some of the prime quotes, but if you're into this stuff, and I recognize a lot of us don't care, you can get a paperback copy of the Federalist Papers. And like we started off the introduction, I believe it's one of the best commentaries, political treatises on the philosophy of government ever. So, you know, and we are woefully ignorant. And I admit, I have not read the whole thing cover to cover. So we are a constitutional republic. not a Marxist socialism and its destruction of private property. Think about what our government does and what socialism wants to do. Destroy private property, destroy the family, destroy the religion, destroy history. Ring a bell, any of these? Destroy law, destroy ethics. Our great seal says, the new order for the ages. You know, so there's where the new world order. What? No, in the positive sense, this was to be a new order for the ages. The new American era. And the Anuit Coptus on your dollar bill. You know, the eye and on the pyramid and all those secret signs for all the Masons and, you know, that are the Bilderbergers, they're all taken over, right? Along with the Jews. They're taking over everything. But the word, that phrase says, He, God, has favored our undertaking. So in other words, God, we are doing this and we want God to bless what we are doing. What a way to start a country. So then our responsibility, once again, to that, this is America. And I don't think we have any lousy Canadians here, do we? No. What is our responsibility? Kelvin, would you read Deuteronomy 31, 24 to 29?
For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. If today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord, how then much more after my death? Gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing, and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you do evil in the sight of the Lord, him to anger through the works of your hands.
Okay, so this is obviously Old Testament law under a theocracy. That's something we need to also understand. The American Constitution is not a theocracy. And there are camps of, I'll say, Christians who believe in what's called dominionism or theonomy, where if we would just rule by the Bible. Well, of course that'd be great, but that's not America. That is not so for us to insist. You know, if we just got back to stoning people for picking up sticks on, well, I agree, that'd probably make for a better country, but we shouldn't do that. Okay? So, and if you caught that, the law, Old Testament law is the context, but for us, the Constitution is a witness. The law, lex rex, the law is the witness against rebellion and stiff necks. That is all of us to some degree. I'm sorry, that's sin. Utterly corrupt and turn aside from the law, Moses said. Evil will befall you in the latter days. And so I can see an outworking of that. I mean, a lot of you guys aren't as old as I am. But I'm 60 now, and I've seen us going downhill for many years, slipping away from a lot of these principles. So, an a fortiori, that means all the more, principle. We disregard the law at our peril. Britain, the brilliance of universal, first, eternal principles found in the Constitution, help check the nature of man while preserving natural rights. And folks, just like in the church, being accountable, people do not like being accountable to anyone or any law. How many times, well, we need to change that law because I don't like it. See, that's just our sinful nature. From way back as Christians, we understand back in the Garden of Eden, you will be like gods. We want to decide what is right. Relative, you know, relativism, all those things that we've talked about before. And that's so biblical, folks. And that is sin nature. And because of sin nature, God with government and our founders formed a not perfect, but as close to, I would argue, I still bleed enough red, white, and blue, still enough most perfect form of government. Because isn't it true we're the only republic or constitutional form of government that's lasted more than, do you know the dates on that?
I don't know the dates, but this is the longest established constitutional republic.
Yeah, and so, and I have heard a joke, after we freed Iraq and they needed a constitution and some wag said, well, why don't we send to Mars? We're not using it. Okay, so John Adams' quote then.
Read it. I'm sorry. Our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other.
Ha, 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 ha. We want 16-year-olds to vote. If they know my son, they don't want my son voting.
You go back and you look at, and there are periods in our country where it comes and goes. But one of the things that blows people away is if you go back and read in this period, or you read references in the Killer Angels, if you ever read the Killer Angels, people are like, oh man, that's so artificial. No, that's the way they talk. You know, they had, I think the reference was made to Air That We Breathe, the book about, that you're immersed in this and you don't understand anybody else. If you want to read and understand the personal letters that people wrote, history, because they just make a slight allusion. And they know everybody knows what they mean when they say that, but, people of the 21st century read it and they go, what the heck is this guy talking about?
It's always easy to say, that back in the good old days, well, there were problems, but there were a different foundation of what people understood. And so I'm not saying you can only by being a Christian are you going to understand this. Although I will say we ought is a word we should, because we should understand this foundation. It used to be atheists, at least understood the God of the Bible that they disbelieved in. Does that make sense? They knew enough, people knew enough about the Bible that they could make fun of it. Now people have no idea. And that's, once again, that's, you've heard me say, that's pagans don't know any better. I'm not going to get after pagans. They need Christ. But that's why this class, we need to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. One more quote, Kelvin.
Yes.
Stop playing solitaire and study your Latin, will you? Okay, and that was, I forget which of those old dead guys. Oh, I could almost come up with it, but said, de Tocqueville, I believe, wasn't he the one that came over and was just amazed at, how America worked? And he, maybe it was, but he said, this is great, but this kind of government with unthinking folks, once they figure out they can vote themselves money, it's going to collapse. Is that Tocqueville? Okay. Yep. So, just so from God's glory to the Constitution, our responsibility, we the people are the government. So that's some of our documents in brief. By the way, I've said this before, if you are interested in this, and just because I am doesn't mean you have to be, but Hillsdale College has free classes online on all the branches of government, the history, all this stuff. They have a great political science department. So if you want to get a lot of this research comes from them. So, all right, any comments, questions at this point? Hal?
So if I understand correctly, you're saying people are rebellious.
No, everybody's.
My question is how can a rebellious people create documents to control rebellious people?
That's my great comment. That's deep, wow.
Very interesting how the Magna Carta, the English doctrine, being Protestants and rebelling against the Catholic Church, so to speak, in the Reformation, how all this has led into these principles that are in this document. That's the really foundation ideas.
Going back to the Enlightenment and...
So I'm just saying, we have to look at this in a jaded view, in my opinion, because we are an experiment.
Well,
we really are an experiment. We're finding out every day things are not working right.
Well, because people are not, are not being the citizens they should, because they recognized it wasn't perfect. It wasn't if God were here to say you will do this and this and this, if the government was angels, there would be no need for control of the government. But at least they recognized human nature in the sense of people are rebellious, so we need some form of government, but not a government that's going to lop off your head for, disobeying the speed limit or something. But yeah, good point. And that is, to me, the brilliance of, as far as fallen man, what they were able to create is what you said. It worked, and I my heart, I'm so sad to see how we are discarding those principles. But that goes back to like what Janet was saying, our citizens, we have a responsibility. Well, I can't answer for the pagans out there. And people are greed, those rich people, they need to pay. There's lots of things that we as Christians should be part of the solution. Tony.
Textual interpretation, context is everything. And concerning the Constitution tells us not to expect nitpicking detail and to give words and phrases an expansive rather than a narrow interpretation.
That's a good segue. That's where we're going next.
That's the source of the Thomas Jefferson quote about the Tree of Liberty, so frequently mangled. The kind of answer to how these were not, I have a great deal of respect for these people, but as a measure, the colonies, the American colonies, are a small fraction of the British Empire, and the single largest group of people who subscribe to political philosophy and history books were the colonists. We consumed more volumes that were ordered from England on that than all of the country of England did, as well as their other dominions. So these guys were steeped not only in the history, they knew more about Roman history and Greek history, and how did the Spartans govern themselves, how did the Athenians govern themselves, and that sort of thing. How did that turn out? But they read philosophy quite deeply, and it was a time of intellectual foment. but these guys were the locus of it. There's no place else on the globe that you could go to find people who were thinking more deeply about this kind of thing. So it's an experiment, but it's an experiment based on English history, common law, you know, Enlightenment philosophy, scripture, that sort of thing. So they not only did they worked at that very hard. The other thing was you had to have 9 of 13 colonies sign up for this for it to be adopted, and they weren't going to get 9. They had about 7 that they could get, and the anti-federalists were the group that argued against it. Where Madison would say, "Hey, we don't need to have this Bill of Rights because the Constitution says this is all they can do." Yeah. Well, other people like George Clinton, the governor of New York, Patrick Henry, and Mercy Otis Warren, one of my personal favorites. She was the wife of the president of the Massachusetts Assembly. She was he had been the paymaster for the army in the Revolution. So she was very influential. She had this great social network, and she was stirring up people against the Constitution because it didn't have enough guarantees. Madison said the Constitution is a positive framework. It says you can only do these things. Warren and others were saying, no, people are too screwed up. You know, they're gonna mess this up. So we need to have positive declarations of rights. In other words, negative things. You see, the government cannot make a law establishing religion and that sort of thing. And so that's where the Bill of Rights comes from. It was instituted over the objections of the framers.
And then I have one other comment. And we're not going down this path today, but it's been a big research project of mine. A third of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. And it's very interesting when you start looking at the principles of Freemasonry. Again, I'm not going to go into that, but that shaped a lot of their thinking as they wrote the Declaration of Independence and then led to the Constitution. I just find that that's part of my research. I haven't really seen anyone document or write something related to how their participation with the Freemasons contributed to the creation.
Do you know the secret handshake?
There's multiple handshakes.
And all I will say about that is Freemasons back then are not the same as they were more Christianized Freemasons than they are now. So, but yeah, that's it. I agree. And, you know, that's why the big eye and a lot of people, all that stuff are a lot of Masonic, iconic, whatever it is. And so it's, yes, Tony.
I may be wrong about this, but my opinion through what we're discussing is that I'd like to say that the people in the United States treat this Constitution like you talk about people who pick one phrase out of the Bible and say,
there you go.
Okay, thank you. Good segue, that's where we're going. But I will say, based on what Janet was saying, so, you know, who were these thinkers? They had a well-informed opinion. That's one of my things that I just chuckle at. Well, that's just your opinion. I've thought about it. Have you? You know, the old phrase, don't confuse your Google search with my decades of theological studies. I'm glad you Googled it, but that doesn't necessarily mean your opinion from Google as informed as the doctor who has a degree or, you know, fill in some other expert. And that's what we're going to talk about now, because the principles of understanding this document. Okay, so a definition: originalism, textualism, constitutionalism, OTC. You know, to me, what's the prescription for our problems today over-the-counter, OTC, originalism, textualism, grounded in the Constitution. What is originalism? Trying to understand the original meaning, understanding, and intent of the framers. You have to start there, anchored. Now, you know what happens after that, but they meant something, and the process. So how does one go about ascertaining the original meaning of the Constitution? And this comes from the Heritage Guide to the Constitution. That's a good book to have in your library. But all originalists begin with the text of the Constitution. Imagine that. Let's go back to what the book says. The words of a particular clause. In the search for the meaning of the text and its legal effect, originalist researchers variously look to the following. And I'm not going to read them, but you've got the list. Just, you know, this is reading a book 101. We don't know how to read anymore because we Google everything. But how to read a book. There's a great book, Mortimer Adler, How to Read a Book. It's a classic on understanding what kind of book, what is the author trying to say, understanding what the author meant. A good example is the newspaper, when we used to have them. Do you read the front page stories different than the opinion? Oh, that's a bad example. Do you read the front page stories like the comics? No, you know, you understand that you read them differently. And the sports scores, hopefully, you know, you read those different than the opinion pieces. So understanding how language works. That's a basic prerequisite for all of life, especially the Constitution. And you can read through that list under originalism. Next one is textualism. What does that mean? Kelvin, would you read that, please?
Textualism means interpreting the text of written law without going beyond the intent of those legislators who made the law. Judges have no authority to pursue broader purposes. Judges should interpret legal text as written, not as it should have been written.
And you get that? That is key. Okay, the law. Judges are to take the Constitution, take a law, and see if it fits. The law, they are to read the text of the law, textualism, and don't try to interpret, push their own meanings. You know, what was the 2015 homosexual marriage, where Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, he took the law permitting nationwide homosexual marriage. And he said, well, it should have been written this way. And so we interpreted he rewrote it basically so that he could, fix the law. Well, you really wanted to word it this way so we can make it constitutional. That is not the way the Constitution or laws should be written. And if you remember, Anton Scalia had a great scathing reply. He said, Kennedy's reasoning has all the aphorisms of a fortune cookie. I mean, I love Scalia. Okay, so quote from Scalia. In textual interpretation, context is everything. And concerning words and phrases, an expansive rather than narrow. Or no, the Constitution tells us not to nitpicking detail and to give words and phrases an expansive rather than a narrow interpretation. In other words, people love to, well, that word could mean this, my favorite view. So I'm going to interpret it the way I want to interpret the word. Scalia saying, no, you have to take words in their context. Okay? And that's a thank you for the Patsy question. What does this sound like? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? MSA. Okay? Nehemiah 8:8. So they read distinctly from the Constitution, I mean the book, the law of God, and they gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. So they start, you start with the text, you explain the text, you know, maybe unknown words, give the, you know, in MSA, the significance, what's the big idea? And then you help them understand and apply it to their lives. Okay, that's what I do with the, try to do with the Bible. But that's the exact same principle for any book. But, you know, when you're reading a novel, maybe there's not so many consequences. But with the Constitution, are we just going to let somebody interpret it any way they want? You've heard the term a living, certain people like to talk about the Constitution as a living, breathing document, means we can interpret it any way we want. No. And that's, well, good, thank you. If you want to change it, you know, is the change a good idea or not? That's another question. But we have a mechanism to change it. But you don't just ignore it. See, that's what me, you know, I'm good at. Well, I don't like that law. Speed limits, those are guidelines. You know, so I just rewrite, you know, what I want to do. And that happens all the time. You know, that's not really a law. The real bad people are the ones that are, once again, praying that, you know, black is white is black. It's that little old lady praying for human life at a Planned Parenthood. Because after all, if she's out there, it may make the person going in to get an abortion feel bad. And we can't have that. And so then just a little MSA here for you. Who determines meaning? The correct answer, I'll skip it, is the author. The author determines meaning. And so then, how do we interpret his meaning? In biblical hermeneutics, it's called literal, plain, or normal. We have language. There are rules to language. You know, you take the words and understand how they, you know, the different types of Bible literature. Is it epistle, narrative, law, prophecy? You know, this Sunday, I'm excited. One of my favorite stories in the Bible, in John 9, and it's a type of literature that has a lot of sarcasm in it, and this, the blind man that's healed by Jesus, I love this guy, and just how he's given back to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. He gets very sarcastic with them. Another phrase maybe you've heard is grammatical historical. The rules of grammar. Language has rules. You all took sophomore comp. Even fighter pilots. So grammatical, how the language works, historical, how those words operated back then. See, that's another thing, is people take old words, you know, that meant one thing back in, you know, biblical times or even the founding, and now we've changed our language so much that we're not reading the words the same way. And so we are, you know, well, we are missing the point because we have changed the meaning of those words. So any questions on that? If you...
Yeah.
And
so
Yeah.
Understand the context, understand the time, understand the words. Echoing what you said.
Nope, that's a perfect example. Okay, so now just we'll talk a chit on this because we got a little time here. We're not going too long here. But if you don't get that right, if you don't value the Constitution, which I would submit really most of our country does not, and you don't interpret it properly, see, that's good old Americans. Well, whose view is proper? I don't agree with that. Let's go back to your Google search is not like Madison's understanding of all the history and things. You get progressivism. So the progressive era, which began in the 1800s, was a direct and conscious rejection of the original principles of the Constitution. The idea is, tell me if this is not, doesn't ring true. We have progressed beyond those old people. We've gotten so much smarter. We've progressed beyond the principles of the founders. We need a new understanding of government. You know, we need a national government, not federal. We need a national government is needed because of economic and cultural circumstances that could not have been envisioned. You know, George Washington, he didn't know anything about computers, you know, but it could not have been envisioned by the founders who were bound by historical contingency. You know, so obviously, so we've progressed so much beyond, and that's a category error. Of course, we've progressed jet engines, computers. You know, we've gotten more advanced in certain areas, but I would say we have devolved when it comes to actual thinking. You know, we Google things now rather than, you know, read the whole text of Polybius or something. And so the critique then was the Constitution is old and out of date. We have new problems. So the Constitution confines, the Constitution is an obstacle to government policies. Hillary is talking about the First Amendment is getting in the way of us controlling speech. What? Is there any wonder we have? And so here's a phrase, the historical arrogance of the founders, daring to speak for all times. How dare those old white slave-owning men speak for me today? I am so much more enlightened. And that comes from, where does this come from? Some of the roots come from German ideals. You see, in this, you know, a little history of the critique of individual and natural rights, organic state, a living state, and a living constitution. So the text, this becomes independent. It doesn't mean anything. The text is just floating around, and we can take those words and make them mean whatever we want. That's what we're doing. And so a good government, they would say, adapts to environment to live. Evolution. See, this gets into evolutionary theory and age of the universe and all that stuff. There's background to this. So who are some early progressives? A guy probably nobody's heard about, but Frank Johnson Goodnow. But he studied in Germany, and he was quoted as saying that they are not natural rights of the individuals granted by God, but by society for social expediency. So government, society gives us rights for the good of all society, not God. Anybody ever, any teachers here? Sorry, we're going to toast John Dewey. He was horrible. Okay? You're a fan?
I'm not a fan.
Okay, good.
But he's a veteran.
He is. Okay, but he said in a famous essay in 35, the permanence of natural rights is a relic of a bygone era. Relevant to only their time, they don't understand historical relativity. Okay, you understand what the word relativity means? And so, you know, it all depends on the situation. And obviously we are much smarter and more progressed than that stupid guy, John Adams. And they're saying that out loud. And see, well, and what do you expect from these people? But I would hope we would rise up and say, wait a minute, I remember Frank Goodnow Johnson, but we don't know who he is. There's another name you've never heard of. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The Declaration has eternal truths. He liked the Declaration of a lofty abstract ideas, then that he could fill in the content with his freedom from fear, freedom from want, the New Deal. The task of statesmanship has always been the redefinition of these rights in terms of the changing and growing social order. Okay? Another name you've never heard of. Woodrow Wilson. You know, here's a guy who ostensibly, but he was a university president, so he is educated beyond his intelligence, we'd say. But he says, if you want to understand the real Declaration of Independence, do not read the preface, the timeless laws of nature. No, you don't want to read that. That's old. It was a historical grievance only. So in other words, it was only valid for that particular time and that particular place. In a speech in 1912, What is Progress? Woodrow Wilson said, government is a living thing, understood like organic life. This was the age of Darwin and evolution, and boy, all smart people believed in evolution. Organic life versus the mechanistic view of the founders, those stupid literal thinkers, the founders, and the Newtonian perspective of the Federalist Papers. We should be accountable to Darwin and shaped to its function by the pressure of life. So comparing government to biological life. Here's one that disappoints me, but Theodore Roosevelt, you know, big personality. He did, you know, I love the Great White Fleet. I love stuff, but he was big on progressivism. He gave us the national parks, which, well, not the land, BLM, but Tony's dealing with the National Forest Service.
He gave us that too.
But he had what was called, and this sounds so good, he believed in what was called the stewardship theory or the plenary view of government. In other words, government can do whatever is necessary unless specifically restricted. Do you understand how that is exactly opposite from the enumerated powers? Now it's, okay, government can't do this, but they can do everything else. That's an Air Force flight manual. Navy flight manual was, okay, don't do this, or you can do anything, this'll kill you. You know, that's, you don't get that anyway. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
you flew in the Marines. NATOPS, you know, don't do this. Everything else, you're adults. Air Force, you can only do this. Nothing else. Sorry. Is it true? That's and so the in a speech he gave after he, you know, when he formed his Bull Moose Party, which is sort of when, you know, his personality lost half the election, but the right of the people to rule speech, he was an advocate of direct democracy. Institutions are corrupt. I won't read some of this. But now, that had never happened today. What is Governor Walz advocating for? He wants, not everything. He wants to get rid of the Electoral College. Direct democracy. Do you think there was a reason why the founders did that? But we're smarter than they are. So, you know, one man, three votes. If you're dead, only two votes.
And he thinks everybody else wants to too, because he says everybody knows it's got to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
From the same era came the direct election of senators. Previous to the progressive era, senators were appointed by the...
Which amendment was that? Was that prohibition? Well, that was prohibitions. Yeah. But that's a perfect example. We're gonna direct the election. And do you think there was a reason for that? Could it be corrupted? Sure. We're humans. But now do you think it's corrupted? I mean, I know you guys are all happy with Hickenlooper and Bennett. I know that. One more thing from Woodrow. He did not like the separation of powers. He liked the parliamentary system of the UK, contra the checks and balances of Federalist 51 that Calvin read earlier, because he thought government was inefficient. Government can't solve problems. Maybe that's the point, to checks and balances. Yeah, most dangerous words, seven most dangerous. And so he thought the government should operate like a business. And irresponsible, he would say, under that old constitution, government gets in the way of the will of the people. Guess who knows the will of the people? Woodrow. Yeah. And so government must adapt to its functions and tasks, empower a national administration, and free it from politics. Okay, so the structure, that gets into the administrative state we have today. And so the idea with agencies, I won't read all these, but, you know, the EPA, for example, unelected administrative branch. We call it the fourth branch of government now. And they're unelected. You can't get rid of those clowns. But now they have the power to pass their own laws, to execute those laws, and to send you to their court to punish you. So they have usurped the three roles, branches of government under one administrative state. And Well, okay, a couple, so these are rhetorical questions. Should the government have an EPA? No. Should the government have a Department of Education? The federal government? No. See, so all these things, and OSHA, you know, that was Nixon, did a lot of this stuff. And so now all these unelected bureaucrats that... you can't get rid of them. I mean, they're like in the woodwork.
Well, the fact that they are making laws, regulations, they don't call it laws, but regulations that people have to abide by.
The Fisher, yeah. Inspector on the Fisher boat.
That kind of return.
We charge you $700 a day to apply to our rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, and see now, okay, so horrible. Going back to a quote, do you remember? But the passions that each of these branches need to defend their area of expertise. Article 1, the first word says, all laws shall be passed by, I'm paraphrasing, a Congress. All laws. So now what has happened? The old question, well, I vote, we're going to have a vote. When they actually vote in Congress, what are they doing? They could do a lot of work in about 3 weeks and then not hurt us for the rest of the time. But we want clean air. We're passing a law. Who's against clean air? Oh, you wascally Republicans, you're against clean air? No. And then they delegate it to the OSHA, or EPA rather, to, now you come up with the guidelines and the parts per million and all the, you know, the technocrats. Now, so instead of elected officials, we have, and this was Woodrow Wilson, you Americans are too stupid. Congress is too stupid. We need experts deciding this stuff. And so now we are controlled by, what is that form of government, a technocracy or something? Technocrats.
Specifically the intent of it. I'm trying to get away from the spoil system, not the negative, but the positive is going to be we have the smartest, most technically capable experts in that area.
Sort of like that female, quote unquote, admiral that runs. What does he run?
It runs.
Okay, so this goes back to Reagan, or at least he said it, but a little humor. Government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. Yeah. Sure.
My choice early in life was either to be a piano player in a whorehouse or a politician. To tell them the truth, there's not hardly any difference.
Truman is one Democrat I almost like. So.
He's the guy who started calling Republicans Hitler. He's the first one, and they've done it 3 years since.
Really? Now, one thing he did do, May 14th, 15th, 1948, within 10 minutes of Israel declaring itself a nation, Harry Truman was the first national leader. The U.S. recognized Israel. Now, we've been stabbing in the back ever since, but... So then just one final comment or little section here. So the danger of that administrative state as envisioned by Woodrow Wilson, politics, that to him meant the mandate for a desired end. So we can do whatever we want to get to this end. That's politics. That's why the will of the people. And then we will have administration. That can be the any means. We will then have a fourth branch of government that effects that end despite what the Constitution says. You know, politics gives us top cover. Well, the people want clean air. So administration can do whatever, trample on anybody's rights, take the road out of the middle of your property, you know, just to get that desired end. And so it ends up with an unlimited government. You see, this is the good kind of progressivism. Good, in quotes, back in the 1800s, with a centralized bureaucracy, that's what became Rex Lex. The king, in this case Washington, has become the law, versus the law, the Constitution becoming the king. And so we have entitlement state, regulatory state. Illustration, any of you remember the Homestead Act? Yeah, that was a mere 1,400 words to give away land which the federal government should not be in the land business. The ACA, you know, the Affordable Care Act, it has thousands of pages. So legalese, and so all the regulations that you're violating something somewhere. And believe me, they'll come after you if you don't vote the right way, probably.
That's the famous one. You have to pass it, and then you can
know it. Exactly. Federalist 62 by Madison said, it will be of little avail to the people, avail good to the people, that the laws are made by men of their own choice, if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood. Okay? Yeah. And then I have an illustration of how many of you remember Schoolhouse Rock? Government, I'm only a bill sitting here on Capitol Hill. Do you remember? Those were great. But now we need Teletubbies or something else on cartoons. And Madison said in Federalist 47, with no separation of powers, the danger of the administrative state is the very definition of tyranny. Prescient words. And then how many of you remember One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the movie? Jack Nicholson, I love that guy. But you know, he was told eventually, you will conform or else. And that's about what it's become. So, well, guys, thank you for hanging in there. Was that helpful? That's a lot more, and there's a lot of history that I suspect most of us don't really know in depth or very well. Yeah, Hal. Sure.
But when the Constitution was signed and ratified and all that, we had no income tax. We had no income tax until the 16th Amendment, which was under law.
Yep.
It's very interesting to me how we were supposed to fund our nation's government up until that moment. And there were hints that failed. But I find that very intriguing that we were able to survive as a country.
But the government was so tiny.
And
we have, you know, the things that Dieter's been talking about, we have all these articles on the Constitution, and all of that takes a tremendous amount of money. Just the payroll, just the interest on the debt.
Yes. And have you noticed that the jobs reports in the last year, 30% of those new jobs are government jobs.
And then the other thing I found fascinating is
they include hospitals and schools too, because they consider those government jobs.
So when they got I've been researching all this Federal Reserve. That was a big issue. Yeah. In the beginning days, it's having a centralized bank.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that the Great Depression, everybody talks about the stocks collapsing and all that. Well, banks were putting people's money into the stocks. But what was interesting is the Federal Reserve existed, and they raised the interest rates at the time right before the Depression. So interest rates skyrocketed, and you start to see it happen. And you know, it's very interesting, this relationship between money, mammon, and how our government is absolutely bought in by this now. We went to the Truth and Liberty workshop.
and we had folks that were dealing with Congress, and they were saying these new Congress will get elected, and the first thing is their party, the Democrat, both do it, to figure out how much revenue they can generate for the party, and then that puts them on the committees. And you're over here going, oh my gosh, this is so scary that our government now is literally driven by the dollar.
And don't they early on, you know, the old wise Mitch McConnell's sit the young pimple-faced Dieters down and say, now your first job is to get reelected. I thought it was to serve the Constitution. Have you read it, Mitch?
There have been taxes. I mean, the first tax established was Washington establishing a whiskey tax. Yes. Yeah.
And fought a war. And that's the last time a president led the army as the commander-in-chief.
A whole lot of land to sell back.
Yeah, they would distribute that as bounties. Okay, and we will talk. We're done with a lot of the background, so thanks for hanging in. Next time, we will go next Thursday and maybe the Thursday after, but we are going to talk about the issues, the actual issues. So, you know, back to the original. How many of you think you don't pay enough taxes? Okay, but what Kelvin said, you know, going back to what Hal said, what was the 16th Amendment? What did it really say? And taxes, the government always wants money. Well, they're spending it on what? If it actually did only what it's supposed to, federal government's what I'm talking about, they wouldn't need that much money.
The Magna Carta, 1200, was King John.
Yep.
That whole Magna Carta was based on taxes from the nobles.
The rich guys paying.
We not, fight a revolutionary war based on taxation.
Without risk, yep.
On the inscription.
We've already covered that last week. And you rich people, you're not paying your, another phrase I don't like, you're not paying your fair share. I hate that phrase. Scott, Hal, do you know? No, there's more than that.
That said that there's a million civilian employees in the Pentagon. A million.
Oh yeah, that's probably true.
Ridiculous.
Crystal City, Virginia is essentially an extension.
All right, let me just close this out. So next week we will talk about issues. So why don't you bring those back? Because that'll be the time to know specific.
That's that. I'm looking for something that talks about all the ballot measures.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to read this.